bring a message this morning. It seems like as the week starts, I have my mind is going one direction, and I start preparing and laying out thoughts in my mind and looking up things, and that's just the way I study. But then as the week has progressed, things have changed so rapidly in our current environment that my thoughts change, and you know, the thing that I find is that when I first started preaching, it seemed like it was a struggle for me to prepare a message week after week after week. I guess that's because of my own ineffectiveness, but the truth of the matter is, everything that's going on around us, there's information in the Bible. There's something that's applicable to our times. There's something that, if we're become familiar with God's Word, that will be drawn to our mind and our thoughts that are relevant to help guide and direct us. And so that's how, as it has been this week for me. My thoughts have been drawn to this subject today by the events of the tearing down of statues in various places, the push to rename many of our military installations. It's as though that there's a big push to try to wipe out our history, to make it go away by simply not acknowledging it. That never accomplishes anything. And so that's where my thoughts have been. As my title of my message today is The History of a Soul Saved. The history. Notice that word, history of a soul saved. And that's because that every experience that we have in life is important to our development as we go forward. And I looked for an appropriate quote by someone for this morning's message, and I looked through several, and I didn't find anything that really said what I wanted to say, so I wrote my own. It'll probably never be remembered, but that's okay. But I wrote it down, because this is my thought. And that is that history is the sum of experiences which have made us. Denying it does not erase it. Ignoring it dooms us to repeat it, but embracing it empowers us to rise above it. And I think about those words and think about our own experiences. You know, when we receive a member into church, the first thing that we ask is, tell us your experience. What is your history of how God dealt with you to bring you to salvation? And that's really what an experience is. How did you get where you are today? You come through experiences, some of them good, some of them bad, but all of them together have made you who you are and brought you to where you are. And so it is with our nation. Ignoring the things that have transpired in the past will not change the fact that they were there, whether they were good or whether they were bad. And it's foolish to try to think that we're going to change who we are by ignoring our history. We need to learn from it. We need to profit from it. We need to teach from it. And so those are my thoughts this morning as we try to bring a lesson. And so I'd like to take a reading from the 15th chapter of Genesis as the background to start this lesson today. And the first person, I guess, that came to my mind, and there are many in the scriptures that I could have used, but my mind went to Abraham. Abraham is known as the father of the faithful. Now, he wasn't the first faithful one. Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord before that, many generations before Abraham was born. We know that Enoch walked with God, and he was not because God took him. And so we know that there are many, many who have followed after God. But Abraham becomes an example for us because of his experiences and because of his faith. And so he's a good one. You might ask him, say, Abraham, what's your experience of salvation? Now, I don't claim to know exactly when Abraham was saved. I have my theological ideas, and I'm going to read from that this morning. But the one thing that I do know for sure is that it was a journey for him. It was a journey from unbelief to belief. And that's what salvation is. It's that journey from not knowing and from unbelief to that point where that our faith and our belief in God is satisfactory to God. Not to just us that we think we've come far enough, but it's satisfactory to God that our faith in Him is sufficient for Him to declare us righteous, for Him to declare us one of His children. And so all of us that have been saved have a history. We have an experience. I could begin to tell you mine. And I think that the more we dwell upon that, and it's good to do that. It's good to have a meeting when that everybody just feels like telling their history, their experience. Mine goes back to my earliest knowledge of religion, being carried to church by my parents. Many of those things are somewhat vague because I was young at the time, but I know that my journey started then. It started through my parents as they went to church, as my father came under conviction and he had his own journey and his own story to tell, but it was his history and it was important. And how would it, what would it say about me, where I am, if I tried to erase some of the bad parts of my father's history? Because all of those things were important in his journey to faith, which then had a huge impact on me, and my journey has had an impact upon my children, and their journey is having an impact upon their children. And so what part of that history would I take out and say that it doesn't matter anymore, that we should forget it? The bad parts are used many times to bring us to a good part. I was thinking, I'm going to get to this reading in a moment, but I was thinking as I was coming this way this morning that many who want to tear down these monuments and tear down these statues, and we'll get into that a little bit more, or change the name, that yes, there were some difficult, dark times associated with those. But have we not come to a brighter place? Have we not come to a better place? Did we not learn some things that we don't want to repeat? I thought about when the many trips that I have made to Ghana, and Brother Ken was with us on one of them, and we went through the castle, the slave castle. And, oh, that was a dark, dark history, not only for the people in Ghana, because they were guilty of selling their own brothers into slavery. It was a dark period for the English, because they were the ones who were the running the trade routes that were bringing the slaves to the Caribbean islands and into America. And it was a dark day for America. It was a dark day for humanity. But when you go through that, what if they had tore that fort down and that old castle down and said, well, we're going to erase our history by tearing this down? Well, I can tell you that for a little boy from West Virginia that went through that castle and was taught and learned and walked through some of the same places that many had lost their lives, a dark day in history. But they turned it around, and at the end of the tour through it, there's a sign that says, we've learned and we'll never repeat, that we may never come back to this point again. That's what history does. It reminds us of the dark times that we never want to go back to. The nation of Israel, they named, I might get to this message and I might not. The nation of Israel, they built stones. They built monuments all over the place. Every time they had an experience with God, whether it was good or whether it was bad, they put a stone there or they gave it a name. Those things were to be memorials, reminders, reminders of the good times, but also the reminders of the bad times. When they rebelled against God, and God would bring punishment upon them, and they learned their lesson, they still gave that place a name that was reflective of what happened there, so that their next generations might recognize and know what God did there, whether it was good or whether it was bad. All of that was a part of forming who that they are and who that they were. And so History becomes extremely important. The events of our lives, the events of our nation, I don't think that there's any one of us, I would hope, that would ever want to go back to the dark days of slavery. But taking those who were caught up in their times and could only operate within the realm of the environment that they were in, and blaming them and trying to erase them out of history will not solve that situation. There are those today who want to take the names of Washington and Jefferson and others who were founders of this nation. They want they ripped down the statues of Christopher Columbus because that as he came this way, certainly it brought a great difficulty to the indigenous people as the white people from Europe moved in. But tearing down the statue of Christopher Columbus doesn't erase that. Hopefully, we've learned from that. Hopefully, our nation has progressed. We're still not where we need to be. There's not a one of us that's been saved that even though that we have been delivered from the consequences of our sin, there's not a one of us that's where we need to be. We have errors. We have problems along the way. Sometimes we backslide. Sometimes we have to learn new lessons. That's called sanctification. It's the process whereby that after we have been redeemed, that God begins to make us more and more like the way that He wants us. So is the progress of a nation, hopefully moving forward, better times further on. But the further on is related to the things that have already passed. And so those things are extremely important. It's important for our children to know that. It's important that we be able to use those things to teach them the good and the bad. And so I hope that we'll learn our lesson. I got to get back to Abraham. The 12th chapter of the book of Genesis. I'm sorry, 15th chapter. 15th chapter of the book of Genesis, about the first six verses. We're going to come back to this in a little while, but I want to read this to start with. It says, after these things, that's important words, it connects this event with all the things that have gone on before. All the things that have gone on before are connected to what's going to take place. Just like that whatever happens to our nation, whatever happens to us as individuals, is connected with all the things that have gone on before, the good and the bad. And so it's not that we desire the bad, but those things happen. And we should learn by them, we should profit by them. And there's a connection. There's a connection that we have to recognize. And so as it opens up with these words, after these things, the things that had preceded, the word of the Lord came unto Abram in a vision, saying, fear not, Abram, I am thy shield and thy exceeding great reward. Why would he make a statement like that? Why would he refer to a shield and to a reward? Well, you have to put yourself where Abraham was at this time and this point in his life. That's what our lesson is going to be about today, the history of a saved soul. I believe that God had been working with Abraham for ever how many years, but certainly through a great number of events, to bring him to this point where that he was at rock bottom. He was struggling, and he was going through depression, if you will. And so God appears to him in the midst of all of this, and he brings up two things. Fear not, I am thy shield and thy exceeding great reward. And I'll tell you how that came about. And Abram said, Lord God, what wilt thou give me, seeing I go childless, and the steward of my house is this Eleazar of Damascus? God, what could you do to change all of this? How could you get me out of this depression? What is it that you could do that would change all of this? Because at this point, Abraham was an old man, or somewhat old. He had no children. He had accumulated great wealth. He had great respect. But he was depressed because he didn't have anybody to leave it to. He didn't have any children. He didn't have any future. Because our children are our future. And the things that we have gone through and the things that we have tried to accomplish and build, our desire is to pass them on. It's not always money. And if that's all that you want to pass on to your children, you've missed the real point. Because what you really want to pass on to them is a remembrance of a character and a behavior that they want to emulate, that they want to become like, and certainly ours needs to be compared to Christ, not to the rest of the world. But Abraham was depressed because he had no one to pass all of this on to. And Abraham said, "Behold, to me thou hast given no seed, and lo, one born in my house is my heir. I got to just give it to a stranger. I don't even have a child. And behold, the word of the Lord came unto him, saying, this shall not be thine heir, but he that shall come forth out of thine own bowels shall be thine heir. And he brought him forth abroad, and he said, look now toward heaven, and tell the stars if thou be able to number them. And he said unto him, so shall thy seed be." Wow. What a promise. Man didn't have any children. He's old, past the stage of life where that he would have children, be able to bring them up. And yet God says, "Abraham, I'm able to fix this. I'm able to give you more children than you can count on the stars in the heaven or the sand of the sea." That's a pretty big promise. That's a huge promise. And God is the only one that can do it. And what does it say in the next verse? And he believed God, and God counted it to him for righteousness. Now, if Abraham were here today, and you were to ask him, "Abraham, tell me your experience of salvation. How is it that you got to the point where that you fully trusted in God, and God was satisfied that he counted it for righteousness?" Now, you all know that that's one of the points that we make different with the rest of this world who try to preach an easy salvation. They will try to teach, "Well, you just accept God." Well, Abraham had accepted God's existence and power many times before this, but I don't believe that he'd gotten to the point where that God had accepted him. It took some trials, it took some tribulation, it took some things happening in his life to get him to that point. Now, I chose this passage because if you were to go over to the New Testament and read the writings of Paul and of James, you'll find that Paul said that faith, that salvation was of faith, not of works. In other words, you don't do something to earn it, but it's a grace of God granted to us through faith. And he reaches back to this verse in the 15th chapter of Genesis to make his point. He says, "What saith the scripture? Abraham believed God, and it was counted unto him for righteousness." So Paul puts a stake in the ground and says, this is what faith is. When God counts it for righteousness to you, that you have believed him. Because remember, God looks on the heart. He doesn't just look on what you say or what others might say, but he looks upon the heart, and it's a heart work to get us to the point, each of us, whatever point that might be, whether you're 8 years old or whether you're 80 years old, to get you to that point where that your heart trusts in God to God's satisfaction, and God has accepted us and rewarded us by clothing us in his righteousness and counting us, not that we are righteous, but counting us, considering us as righteous because we've trusted him. And you see, that's the one thing that's never changed. From beginning all the way through, men are saved. Men, women, boys, and girls are always saved the same way. And that is, they trust God. They believe God. Noah, moved by fear, believed God and built an ark. He trusted God. He believed God. But it took some things to get Noah there. And so each soul has a history of how God worked events in their lives to bring them to the point of salvation. Now, let's just take a quick look at Abraham, and I'm going to run way out of time, but I want to take a quick look at the history. What's Abraham's history of his coming to this point? How did you get to that point, Abraham? Well, first of all, it tells us, it starts way back in the 12th chapter, it says that there was a call that came to Abraham. "Abraham, get up out of the Ur of the Chaldees and get up out of your father's house and come and follow me, and I will deliver you to a land that I prepared for you." And Abraham got a call. And I'm telling you that God gives a call to every sinner. Because Abraham, at the point where that he got the call, that he was ignorant of God. Now, he may have known about God. He may have known that God existed. But did not have a personal relationship with God. But he got that call from God while he was yet not reaching this point where God considered him as righteous. But Abraham got the call. And the sinner that hears the call, "Come unto me, all ye that labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Come unto me and I will give you new life." That's the call. And when you come to that age of accountability and you hear that Holy Spirit knocking upon your heart saying, "Come to me," that's the call. It'll come when we're all come to all of us before we know God. If you don't have a call, you won't come. And so the Holy Spirit's job is to call people. Call people unto righteousness. Jesus said that he would send back the Comforter. His job was to reprove the world of sin, of righteousness, and of judgment to come, and to put a call in. To call up your heart, to knock on your heart and say, "Come to the place that I've prepared for you." And so all of our experience would coincide with Abraham's experience, that at some point along the way, we got a call and we heard it. And I remember when I got the call, I know Cindy's told about the time that she knew the call, that she was hearing the call. She didn't know what to do. She didn't know how to do it. But she knew that there was a call coming to her. And so, he got a call. And so, how did it come? It come personally. Abraham heard it himself. God spoke to him. Now, there's a broad call that goes out to all the lost. There's a broad call that goes out to the whole world. But there's a personal call that comes to our hearts by the Holy Spirit of God to call each of us as individuals unto Him. God cares about the individual. You see, that was one of the problems with the nation of Israel when Jesus walked here on the earth. They thought that they were righteous because that they had inherited it from their father Abraham. Because they were children of Abraham in the flesh. They thought that they were righteous because that God had called Abraham and said that he was going to make his posterity as the stars of heaven. And so they thought, "Well, we're his posterity, therefore we are righteous." And Jesus pointed out to them, you're not the children of Abraham. If you were the children of Abraham, you would hear me, because I'm saying the same thing as Abraham did. I'm pointing out the error of your way. And so there are many today that think because they're brought up in a Christian family or a Christian nation, or there was a general call that went out to the lost, that they're beneficiaries of it. But I'm here to tell you that it's a personal call that comes to each and every individual. Now, if you've heard that call, you need to do what Abraham did. He got up and went. He got up and began to follow. That's the call involved. First of all, he had to separate from the things behind and began to go toward God. We could tell the story of the prodigal son who was down in the foreign country and had used up all of his goods and he was miserable. He was miserable, and he realized that if he went back to his father's house, things would be a whole lot better off for him. But he had to do something. He had to begin that pursuit to go back to his father's house. Now, God's promise to Abraham was, "I've got a place for you, and I will make your seed as the stars of heaven." But Abraham had to get up and go and begin to do something. And so he left what was behind and began to pursue God and began to follow after God. And God had a journey for him that was going to bring him to righteousness. But it was a journey. It was the journey God was taking him on. There would be problems. There would be difficulties. There would be hope. There would be times of sorrow and sadness. But all of this was to bring him to the point that in spite of everything else, and in spite of the odds of nature, of his old age, but in spite of all of that, he still believed God's promise. That's where God wants to get each one of us, is the point that despite all the things that seem to be contrary, that we believe God's promise of salvation and something that he's prepared for us. And so, he had. What was the promise? God made him a promise when he called him. He said, "I got a promise for you. I'm going to make you a blessing to all of your posterity," which he didn't have any yet, "and to all the nations of the earth." Now, I'm going to make you a blessing instead of a curse. And I'm telling you here today that the parents who don't teach their children about God don't begin to lay out a pathway for them. The Bible clearly teaches us that the sins of the father are visited onto the fourth, third, and the fourth, and the fifth generation. Now, that doesn't mean that they're being punished for the sins of the father. It means that you have disadvantaged them. You started them down a wrong pathway. You didn't give them the advantage of learning about God and beginning a journey on their own. You took them another direction. That's a great weight that ought to be on every parent's shoulders. I'm thankful as I stand here this morning that when I was a little boy, my father started on the journey of his own, and guess what? I got to go along with him. And we walked along together for a ways as he taught me, and as I was brought up, and as I was educated, and as I was introduced. But there came a point when our pathways began to diverge, and I had to either follow God myself or not follow Him, and I got a personal call. And so I'm thankful to my parents who walked along that journey with me for a ways, but they couldn't carry me over the finish line. Only the Lord could carry me over the finish line. And so, first of all, Abraham got the call. Then he began the journey. He began the journey. He left behind the old things and he began the journey. Some of you are here this morning. Many of you, all of you are here this morning. But some are in churches this morning and they've had to leave friends. They've had to leave the ways of this world in order to come to church because they want to make this journey. Others don't want to leave. Others like the friends back in the world and all the things that the world is doing, and they don't want to make this journey, and so they stay where they are, and they don't want the promises that God has promised them and said He would do for them. They'd rather take their chances on their own. I think we see many of those out looting and rioting and causing problems in society. Anarchy. They don't like law. They don't like order. And they're instilling those things in the next generation. And I can't believe that they're following God because that's not the God I know. That's not the God that I have learned about. The God who has drawn near to my heart and drawn me close to Him. That's not the character of the God that I know. And I know those things not only by my personal fellowship with Him, but by studying His Word and seeing how that He opposed those things, how that He hates violence, how that He destroyed the world because of the violence that was here, how that He hates those who rebel against law and order. He told His people, if you will obey my commands, I will bless you. But if you disobey, there will be punishment upon you. He's taught us all the way through the generations of history how that we are to do right and to reject wrong. That's the God I know. And in rebellion against government, the Bible teaches us clearly that God has given us government that for our benefit, for our protection. It's not that it's perfect. We have to work on those things. We have to progress on those things. We as America, many times we're called an experiment in democracy. And you know why? Because all the preceding generations tried something else. All the preceding generations failed, and so this democracy that we enjoy is a product of many events in the past. And without them, we wouldn't be here where we are now. Do you want to abandon that and go backwards? I don't want to go back to many of the places in my history where that I was miserable or where I did wrong or whether I need correction. I don't want to go backwards. Abraham didn't go backwards. He went forward. I've got to move on. So he began the journey. He began the journey. He got up and went. In the 12th chapter, in the 5th verse, it says, "And Abraham took Sarah, his wife, and Lot, his brother's son, and all his substances that they had gathered, and the souls that they had gotten in Haran," that's where his dad went. See, his dad actually began the journey. His dad actually began the journey. Didn't tell us much about that because the focus is on Abraham. But actually, Abraham's father, Haran, began the journey by leaving Mesopotamia. And so Abraham got a benefit of that. He got separated from the wickedness of Mesopotamia while he was a young man. I had the benefits of the journey that my father started when I was just too young to even to make a decision on my own. So I see a likeness in my experience and Abraham's experience His journey started with his father, but there come a point where that he was to leave his father behind and his family behind, and to journey out further where God had for him. It says, and so he left, and they went forth to out of Haran to go into the land of Canaan, and into the land of Canaan they came. And so he began to follow God himself down the pathway to find out what it is that God had for him, and to listen to the voice of God. Now, as he went along the way, everything wasn't a bed of roses. Everything wasn't bright and shiny and perfect. The Apostle Paul, we know that he had a saved to go into Bethania one way. But in a dream, there was a man over in Mesopotamia that said, come over and help us. And so Paul changed directions and followed the Lord. And you would have think, well, boy, everything went great for him because he was following the Lord. But it didn't. As soon as he got over there, he got in trouble, got thrown in prison, got beat. Things were pretty miserable. He had difficulties along the way. Now, this was a man who was already saved. And so we can expect difficulties along our life. But all of those things will make us stronger in our faith. But Abraham experienced difficulty in this journey toward faith. In the sixth verse it says, and Abraham passed through the land into the place of Shechem, unto the plain of Moreh, and the Canaanite was in the land. Now God had promised the land of Canaan to Abraham, but the Canaanite was there, and they didn't want to give up their land. They didn't want to give up their land any more than the indigenous people wanted to give up their land when that Christopher Columbus came over this way. And so there was conflict. Abraham had conflict in the land. He ran into problems along the way, but when he ran into problems, he had assurance from God. And so right when he was in the middle of problems, God appeared to him again. In the seventh verse of the 12th chapter, and it says, and the Lord appeared unto Abraham again, and said, unto thy seed will I give this land. And there builded he an altar unto the Lord who appeared unto him. He didn't get discouraged and go back. God reassured him, you're on the right path, Abraham. You're on the right path. And he appeared to him and comforted him in the time of trouble. And what did Abraham do? He built an altar and praised God. He built an altar and said, God, I'm still following you. And so he had reassurance from God. And then he demonstrated that he believed God. He was still on a journey. He hadn't reached the point where God wanted him to, but he was still in this journey. And he believed God. What did it tell us in the eighth or in the ninth verse? In the ninth verse of the 12th chapter, it says, and Abraham journeyed, going on still toward the south. That was the direction God had said, come and follow me and come down into this land. And so he started out from Haran, heading toward the south. Ran into difficulties, had to regroup, but it says that he continued on the south. He continued on that journey, and that's the advice that I would give to any that's lost and not been saved. You started this journey. You've acknowledged that you need to be saved. Don't give up. Don't quit. Stay on that journey. Stay on that journey. Follow the Lord and draw near to Him when you have an opportunity. When you meet difficulties, that's the time to bow down before Him and say, God, I'm trying. I'm still following. Help me. Help mine unbelief. Get me to the point where you need me to be that you might be able to save my soul. Because God does the saving. And you're on this journey that God has started for you. And so he started down this journey. And he did the same thing that many of us do. And we'll call it backsliding because he did. He went backwards away. He began to trust God. And then there was a trial that came up. And so he was down in the land. And while he was down there, there was a famine that hit the land. And God had already promised him the land. And Abraham got weak in his journey. He got weak in his journey and he quit going to church. You might say, I'll use that as an expression. He quit following God and he thought, well, God can't take care of me. I'm going to have to go down into Egypt where they got food. And so the trial got more than Abraham could bear and he backslid a little bit. He backslid a little bit and he went down into Egypt. And so the trial for him, if he had it to do over again, he probably wouldn't do it. But it was important. I'm sure he learned a lesson from it, from his backtracking. Because he went down into Egypt, and as he was down into Egypt, he failed God while he was down there. He just completely fell off the wagon, if you will, for lack of a better expression, because then once he was down in Egypt, he was no longer trusting God, but he became fearful. He became fearful that the Egyptians might kill him because he had a beautiful wife. And so the fear raised up in him, and he became selfish because that he feared for his own wife. And he said to Sarah, "Now, if they ask you who you are, you tell them you're my sister." Well, that was a half-truth, because she was his half-sister. She was the daughter of his father, but not the daughter of his mother. So she was a half-sister. They did that back then, often. And so he told a half-truth because of his selfishness, and didn't trust God. God had already said, "Now, Abraham, I'm going to give you this land, and I'm going to give it to your posterity." And so if God was going to do that, God wasn't going to let him die down there in Egypt. But he slid backwards. That happens to all of us. It can happen to a lost person as they're seeking the Lord. There have been many that have started to seek the Lord, come to the altar, didn't get saved, and so they just kind of backslid out into the world, and you may not see them back for a while. We've got some that are that way here at Sulphur Fork. Where are they? They backslid, and I know what backsliding's like. I slid back after I'd been saved. Abraham slid back on his journey. It brought fear to him. It brought selfishness to him. It brought hypocrisy, because he said, no doubt, that he was a servant of the Most High God, but he lied about it. He didn't trust his God, and you think the people on the outside couldn't see it? It led to an open rebuke from a non-believer. It led to an open rebuke of one who didn't even believe in God. Pharaoh said, "Why have you done this? Why have you led me to believe that she's your sister?" Because at that point, Pharaoh had taken her into his own harem to make her his wife. And so because of Abraham's failure, he caused a great calamity in the house of Pharaoh and upon all the land. So there were consequences to his backsliding that affected not just him, but also those about him. And so it is when we backslide. When we backslide from following the path that the Lord has laid out, we're not the only ones that affected. If my dad and mom had backslidden and quit going to church, it would have affected me. It would have had an effect upon me. There are some that their families don't come and serve the Lord together. One goes one way and one goes the other. I'm telling you, it will have a divisive effect upon your children. It will have a divisive effect upon them. You hope that they'll take after the one who's serving the Lord, but they could just as easily take after the one who's not. And so that's a danger. That's a danger. That's why we as families need to serve the Lord as a family, because of what we're passing on to the next generation. I've got to move on. Now, he backslid. But guess what? He got restored. In the 13th chapter, it talks about the restoration of Abraham back on the right pathway, back on that journey that God had already started him on. And in the 13th chapter, after all these events of his backsliding down in Egypt, it tells us in the first four verses of the 13th chapter, "And Abraham went up out of Egypt." He left his backsliding, got back on the right path. And he and his wife and all that he had, and Lot with him, into the south. And Abraham was very rich in cattle, silver, and in gold. He profited well in the world. He'd done well. He was no doubt a good businessman. And he went on his journeys from the south, even to Bethel, unto the place where his tent had been at the beginning. He got away from the Lord, and he went the wrong direction. I can tell you from experience that when you get back to the Lord, you have to come back to where you left him. You can't just pick up and away on down the road, but you have to come back to where you went away from him and where you started down in the path of backsliding. And so he came back to where he started from, there in Bethel, where he had at first pitched his tent and built an altar unto the Lord, between Bethel and Ai, unto the place of the altar which he had made there at the first. And there Abraham called on the name of the Lord. There's a great lesson in there for us. When we get out of the pathway, whether we've lost and haven't been saved yet, or whether we've been saved and we're on a pathway of sanctification, when we leave the Lord, we got to come back to the same place where we left. I know that from experience. You got to get back to where you left the Lord. He didn't leave you, you left him and you need to get back to that place and get back on the pathway that you've come off of. And so we see all these things, and I'm way out of time. I don't have time to get into the next events in his life, although they're some of the most important events, and that is that Abraham's character comes out in the next chapter. There's a big dissension comes up between Lot's family and Abraham's family, and Abraham shows his character of trying to serve God and do what's right. And so he saw trouble coming as his herdsmen were, Lot's herdsmen were arguing with Abraham's herdsmen. He could see trouble brewing. He could see trouble brewing down the road, and so he took a step to try to eliminate it. And he said to Lot, there's going to be problems. We're going to have to do something. And he gave Lot the choice. He said, Lot, you choose. If you go to the north, I'll go to the south. If you go to the east, I'll go to the west. You choose. You choose. But right now, the circumstance is not good. And so although he could have made the choice, he was God's man. Lot was what I sometimes call a parasite. He was getting the blessings of God because of all that was overflowing from Abraham, and he enjoyed those blessings. But Abraham showed his true character. He would take the low road and allow Lot to have the high road. He said, you choose where you want to go. You choose the best lands, and I'll take the worst land. And that's what he did. And so Lot went his way, and Abraham went his way. And sometimes, if you're going to follow the Lord, you may have to separate from family. Abraham had to. That doesn't mean he forgot them. That doesn't mean he abandoned them. Because when Lot got in trouble down in Sodom, when the kings came down and they raided Sodom and took Lot and his family and all their goods, when word came to Abraham, he was the first one to come to Lot's defense. He was the first one to step up and help Lot at his own risk. And so he didn't abandon his family at all. When they called, he was right there and demonstrated the blessings of God that was upon him. All that was transpiring was helping Abraham get to this point in the 15th chapter. I don't know anything to do but quit. His story is too big. His journey has too many monuments. It has too many places where that things have been erected and it's had an effect upon him. But suffice it to say that in this 15th chapter, Abraham has come to the point where these other kings, these other things around him, are a threat to him. Who's going to protect me? I went out and protected Lot, but now all the kings that I destroyed, they're going to rise up against me. And who's going to protect me? Who's going to be my shield? And what reward am I going to get out of this? Because when all the goods were passed out and everything was, all the bounty and the loot was done, and all those who had participated in the war and all the goods were passed out, Abraham refused it. He said, I won't take anything. I don't want a dime, least that you say that you've made Abraham rich. So who's going to be my shield? Who's going to protect me when the kings come for me? Who's going to be my reward? I don't have any children. And that's when God appeared to him and said, I'll be your shield. I will protect you. Those kings aren't going to harm you because I will be your shield against them, and I will protect you because I've made a promise to you that I will fulfill. I will be your reward, because what nature can't give you in the fact that you're too old to have children, and Sarah is well up in years, way past the childbearing age, but I will be your reward because I will do for you what nature cannot do. I will bring a miracle into your life, and out of your own bowels I will bring forth a son who will be your posterity. That's a great reward that God had promised him. And what did it say? Abraham believed God. Against all odds, against everything out there, Abraham believed God could do it, and God counted it to him for righteousness. That's his history. That's his testimony of how he got from an unbeliever to a believer who trusted God in everything. And we see that character come out later on as God requires of Abraham to take Isaac. His only son, the one that all the promise was in, said, take him up and give him back to me. Take him up on the mountain and offer him back. And we don't see any hesitation in Abraham's character. There might have been, but it's certainly not recorded. He boldly went and took his only son up there to offer him back to God. It tells us later on, believing that God could raise him from the dead if he needed to. That's the trust in God. That was a journey for Abraham to get there. This life that we enjoy here on this earth is a journey to bring us to God, to sanctify us, to make us more like Him at every step of the way. Hopefully we're getting closer to that, not going backwards. Not going backwards. I'm going to leave that with you. I didn't go exactly the way I planned, but that's okay. I hope it's the way that God planned. I hope that if you're here this morning and you're lost, that you will take an encouragement. Do not get off of the pathway. It is a pathway that God is working out in your life to bring you to that point where you're trusting. Where you're trusting. And if you've been saved and you've fallen back and away and your life got kind of distorted, I've been there too. He still wants to bless you, but you've got to get back. You've got to get back in that pathway to follow Him. Not the ways of the world. Don't fall back to Egypt. Don't fall back to the things you left behind. But pick up where you left off and continue to follow Him. That's my lesson this morning. I'll leave it with you. Brother Jeff, if you've got a song. I know no more than to give an invitation to follow your heart. And in following your heart, follow it to God. Because God is the one who is calling. He's calling, first of all, to save you. And then He's calling to reward you and to bless you in this life. Go ahead, Brother Jeff.